Good morning. Let's see, this is September 11th, about 11 o'clock a.m. on a Sunday. And we are continuing our classes on, or talks on, the journal entries together with the Mystical Eye book. And today's class is difficult, because it's not a class that people enjoy. It's not one that people feel they need to understand thoroughly. And in Joel's experience, it's not one that he gave very often. The name of the chapter in the book is Impersonalizing Error. And people do not like to practice that principle. It's much nicer, says Joel, and in my experience too, to talk about God and the nature of God and the nature of prayer. And it's much nicer to think in terms of, well, God is love and God is omniscience and God is omnipresence. And, well, let me show you the way Joel says it at the end of his chapter in the Kailua study series called The Secret of the Healing Principle. He says this. He says, "This is without any question of doubt the deepest lesson of the message of the Infinite Way, and it is one I give seldom. Not more than 4 times in 8 years have I given this lesson. But the subject of this lesson has been given to classes 4 times in 8 years, and actually, it forms the chapter, The New Horizon, which I find no students making a serious effort, or very few students making a serious effort to understand or demonstrate. But this is the lesson of the chapter, The New Horizon." And he says, because they won't study this deeply, this nature of error, he says, "That is why when you read inspirational literature, you usually end up saying, 'Isn't that beautiful? It was inspiring. But I still have the same problems to face tomorrow.' And that is the reason the inspirational literature of the world is not enough." Now he talks about there being 2 halves to make up this whole Infinite Way. And one is the nature of God, the nature of prayer. And as we did last week, recognizing that I stand at the door and knock, and allowing this I to enter consciousness as an experience. But that's not enough. The other half has to enter in, and that is the nature of error. And understanding, he says, that the fabric of the substance of this world is illusion. And when you treat it that way, instead of treating individual man, woman, and child in condition, you'll have the secret of the healing principle and the secret of overcoming this world. So, put that all together, what does it mean? It means there are 2 parts to the Infinite Way. And if you only have the first part, that of inner realization of the presence of God, you can have spiritual experiences and still suffer from this world, or suffer in this world. You can have a spiritual experience and still get disease. You can have a spiritual awakening, spiritual awareness that lasts for an hour or two in your meditation, and then go about your business and still experience lack and limitation. Now, how is such a thing possible? Well, he tells you in this chapter, which we're going to look at today, called Impersonalizing Error. And he says it throughout the writings. It's very, very specific that there are two parts to the infinite way. One is to admit this I, so that you begin to have these experiences, but the other is to recognize, realize, that error is not personal. It's a universal hypnotism. It's a universal belief. It's a universal concept. It's the knowledge of the belief of good and evil. And it belongs to no person. And so if we are to demonstrate that presence of God, and the second part, the nothingness of this world, then we have to have the formula complete, the two parts of the formula. The impersonal nature of God, which we studied last week, and the impersonal nature of error, which we're looking at this week. Now, he states elsewhere, I think it's in a parenthesis in eternity, but I can't be sure unless I look it up. But I am sure that he states that there are many people, many mystics over the centuries that have had profound spiritual experiences. Yet they've suffered and died in lack and poverty and limitation and disease. And I have a book over here on my shelf called I Am That, and I think the man that spoke the words was, I think his name was Nisargadatta, but anyway, he put, that book came out from his lectures, I Am That, and he had lung cancer. Now, you can read the book and you can tell that he had profound awareness of omnipresence, of the I that we discussed last week. He had it. It's real. You can't fake that kind of thing. And I can read it and I can feel it. He had that awareness of himself as I am that. I am that I am. But he also suffered from lung cancer, which he attributed to karma of the body. Now, karma is a belief in the Eastern philosophies and religions and spiritual paths, and it is that as ye sow, so shall you reap. And so he settled it within himself. He was okay with the lung cancer. He settled it within himself. Well, that's just the karma of the body from past lives or whatever, and I let it work out. I'm not there. I'm up here in this realization of I. Well, that's okay if that's your philosophy and if you're comfortable with it. But here comes this little Jewish fella named Joel Goldsmith who says, I found a way to demonstrate like Christ Jesus, where not only do I have the conscious awareness that I am the way, but disease, lack, and limitation dissolve at my coming, at my awareness. And he says the only way you could do this is to have an awareness of the nothingness, the non-power of error. But he says the demonstration will not be complete if you don't have that realization. If all you have is the spiritual experience of the I, but you still have the belief that there's a you separate, maybe a body or somebody that has to experience karma, then you're going to have two. Now, he says in here, I'm going to give you a clue. If you have the Kailua study transcripts, and you can get them from, well, go to the website, mysticalprinciples.com, and look for the Kailua study talks, and on the front page there it'll give you a link to Mystics of the World, I think it is, and that's where you can get the transcripts for about $30, I think it is. Anyway, it says here, this vision came to me. What vision? Well, let's go the paragraph before that. There's no clearer illustration than this one, because it is extreme. There is no such thing as a dying person. We have an illusory sense of death. When we handle that, the dying person jumps up and says, here I am, all new and fresh, because you haven't done anything to a dying person which didn't exist to begin with. You destroyed the fabric of the appearance, the fabric of that which was appearing. There is no other way. There is no other way of overcoming this world. That's very important. Because we're all talking about waking up out of the illusion of this world into our true identity, and we cover that all the time. But here he flatly declares there's no other way to awaken out of this world unless you have both principles. One, to know that God is the substance of everything, that you're standing in the presence of God but seeing this world. And then the second part is to see that this world, the fabric of this world, is impersonal error. And it has no God in it, no power, no law, no substance. So he says, this vision came to me through, and behind it is every single bit of healing work that was ever done. In my experience, this vision came to me, this unfoldment, because of a paragraph that was in a book concerning the life of Buddha. This life of Buddha was showing the experience that came to him at that time when he still knew nothing about disease or death in the world or any form of limitation. And on his first trip out into the world, he beheld a sick man, a corpse, and a beggar. And he was horrified that such things could exist because the life, the way his father planned it for him, no such things were allowed to appear. And he had never witnessed any of them. And he asked the driver that was driving him around in the coach, are these the only cases of this in the world? Oh, no, no, everyone comes to this eventually. Well, that horrified him. That was unthinkable, that such a beautiful universe that he knew, these conditions of disease, death, and poverty would come. And this is the question that came into his mind. And it gave me, says Joel, the solution to the whole thing. I must find how to remove sin, disease, and death from the world. And that was it. And on the talk, you can hear Joel snapping his fingers. That was it. He never thought about going out and healing people. The thought that came to him was, how do you remove sin, disease, and death from the world? And then Joel says, people are only incidental to our ministry. The actual ministry itself is to break the entire mesmerism of this world. You see that? Oh, gosh, that's so lovely. If you don't see it and you don't feel what I'm feeling, which is wow, then get those transcripts and study that chapter, The Secret of the Healing Principle. Now, in my journal, there are several entries that have to do with the nature of error. Here's one in May of 2009. The belief in good and evil is the glass darkly which covers the awareness of invisible I. The awareness of invisible I is the light which dispels the belief in good and evil. Spiritual awareness melts belief or concept. And here's another one in June of 09. Truth entertained in consciousness becomes the substance of body, business, home, and life. We've heard that a lot. Ah, but truth entertained in consciousness is not a statement of truth in the mind, and not a thought about truth. Truth entertained in consciousness happens when all thought about truth comes to an end. Into that silence, truth announces itself. I am the truth. So you see, there's two parts. One is to know by experience, by awareness, that I. But it's not enough. You don't end there. The other part is to know the nothingness of that which is appearing as something other than I. And if you have both of those parts, then you can have spiritual experiences and harmony of every name in nature. Now, I do not like that idea of having spiritual experiences and suffering at the same time. I'm not big on suffering. I don't like it. When I was very young, I wanted to know why. Why is there such a thing? I remember the first time I saw something. Well, there was a dead bird in my yard. And I was very young, and I didn't know why did things have to die. And also, when I was very young, the first 10 years of my life, I had asthma really bad. Why did I have to suffer? Well, it's because I was born into the belief of duality. I was born into the belief of good, but also evil. Good and also bad. I was born into the belief, one Christmas we were so poor that we had to chop up the cabinets in the kitchen for firewood to stay warm because there was no electricity. So I was born into a belief under the umbrella of my mother's belief, which was a belief in good and bad, lack and limitation and plenty. Love and hate. Sick and well. And so very young, I wanted to know, how do you get free from this? There must be something else. There must be. I felt it. And I began to study God. And like last week, we learned God is not a being, but God is universal being, infinite being. It's this invisible, omnipresent I. And we learn to stand so still in our meditation that we experience, we have glimpses of this I. But we may be suffering from some form of lack or limitation. And so we begin to want to know, how do we overcome this world? All right, so the chapter in the Infinite Way book, The New Horizons, says that we must overcome the belief in good and evil, both the opposites. We must come to the place where we recognize that it is hypnotism. How do we do that? Well, it's no different than learning that we have to have an awareness of invisible I. Not the words, not the thoughts about it, but an actual experience, an actual awareness of it. It is the same with the belief in good and evil. We have to come into an awareness that it is not power in the presence of this invisible I. Without the presence of this invisible I, without the awareness of it, it is power. And it operates in our lives as power. I hurt for 10 years, the first 10 years of my life. Every time I couldn't breathe, and I had to go to the doctor, and I had to carry around this, what was it called, an atomizer or something, and this brown liquid inside of a big ball, and I had to squeeze the ball, and it was nasty. But it's the only way I could breathe. Covering my head with the towel and breathing vapors, Vicks VapoRub in a pan. Yeah. It was not nice. One day I was home from school sick again. I remember sitting by the heater in the living room by myself. Everybody else was gone. And thinking, God, I don't want to be sick. And that was the last year I ever had asthma. And the reason I bring that up is because I wanted to know, how do you get free from these things? And the way that you become, the way that you overcome this world, well, he said in the Kailua Study series, that's the only way you can overcome this world, is to have both principles, the nature of God and prayer, and the nature of error. You have to understand both. You have to have a glimpse of both. And so it's not enough to just have the glimpse of I and still believe that you're suffering. You have to have the glimpse of I and also a glimpse that this that is appearing, the fabric of this, is nothing. And when you have those two together, then you have the Christ message. That's what Christ demonstrated. So, in this chapter, in Personalizing Error, he says, if God is omnipresent and omnipotent, the only presence, are you still present? That's my question. Are you still present? If God is omnipresent, are you still present? Remember Joel saying to me, you haven't got one. You haven't got a presence. Now, what we said about that fellow who spoke the book, I Am That, he agrees here. Joel says, some of them believe that karma is power, more powerful even than God, or they believe that God uses evil for his purposes. They are conditioned. They cannot surrender their belief in the power of sin, disease, false appetite, lack, and limitation. And that is what makes it so difficult to explain this principle to those who have not been inwardly led to such a teaching. Those of you who have been led to it can more readily accept and understand it because you probably have already experienced the non-power of error in some form or other. Whatever you have experienced, however, is only a beginning. Now, he says in another place, that he gave the principle that error is not power. And he says that was wrong. That was wrong. Later, he corrected it. He said to complete that sentence, it should be, error is not power where Christ is realized. In the presence of that realization, error is not power. Or, if you prefer, when God speaks, the earth melts. In the present, that's the same thing, only in archaic language. When God speaks, the earth melts, or poetic language. When God speaks, the earth melts. In the presence of God realized, in the presence of a realization of God, a spiritual realization, a spiritual discernment, in the presence of the spiritual discernment of omnipresence, the appearance of error dissolves. Because we can see there's no God presence there. It's an image and thought, a nothingness, belonging to no one. So, in your meditation, eventually you will come to a deep communion with God. That presence is real and tangible. You begin to commune with that spirit within you. It will very quickly convince you that the powers of the world are not power. He says, in whatever measure you have experienced a spiritual healing, you have already proved this truth. If you had a cold, which is supposed to be a power, and if you had a spiritual healing of it, then you know that what has been proved is that the cold was not the power it claimed to be. If you had a more serious illness, and through your own or another spiritual consciousness, you have seen the pain and the symptoms disappear and harmony restored, all that you have really experienced is the nothingness of that which has been appearing. Now, it is not enough to look at an appearance of error or lack or limitation or disease or inharmony, something appearing bad. It's not even enough to look at an appearance of good. Isn't she beautiful? Isn't he handsome? Isn't that new home fantastic? Isn't that, oh, look at that shiny new car? It's not enough in your mind, in your meditation, to say, well, that right there which I'm looking at, that's an appearance. It's nothing. And so, God, you take over. And then get up and go about your business. You've had a very nice intellectual agreement with the principle, but you haven't experienced it dissolving. And just like the intellectual agreement that God is omnipresent is not enough, you have to come into the awareness of omnipresence, the feel of it. So on this second half, the second part of the infinite way, according to Joel, you have to come into the awareness of the nothingness of the appearance. And that awareness is not a thought. No, that awareness is seeing it dissolve, the bad or the good. We usually start with the bad because it's pushing us. And so sometimes the bad can be our friend, because it pushes us to try to demonstrate the principle. It makes us go back to the drawing board. What did I miss? I'm still suffering. Like he said in the Kailua Study Series, it was very beautiful talk today. Oh, it was so deep. I felt so much from it. And then I walk away from it, and I still can't pay my rent. What is going on here? So he says, all evil, regardless of its name or nature, is the product of a universal hypnotism, an illusion. Whatever discord touches us is nothing but this mesmeric sense. It is not your belief. It's a universal belief. Now, if you remember in The Art of Spiritual Healing, he says, you can give this thing any name you like, so long as it means nothingness, and so long as it is impersonal. And so you look at Frank there, and Frank is suffering from cancer. Now, is this Frank's belief in cancer that's hurting him? In the metaphysical world, you would say yes, he's got an erroneous belief, and you've got to fix that. You've got to do some mental activity, get rid of that belief. But in the mystical world, and in the world of the infinite way, or the way of the infinite. It's not Frank's belief. It's a universal belief. It was there before Frank was there. And it was there after Frank was there. It doesn't belong to anybody. The minute we have this world, we have the universal beliefs that make this world. This entire world, good and evil, he says in The New Horizon, is the mesmeric sense. Somewhere in the beginning of time, we decided we wanted a separate existence. I want my own life. The only way we could have that is by falling asleep and dreaming. And he says it's a dream in that New Horizon. Dreaming this world, bad and good. And the only way to overcome this world, he says, is the practice of both of these principles. And so we sit down in our meditation. And there's Frank. Well, wait a minute. We're new at this. We're practicing this for the first time, maybe, or the first few times. What did he say? I am never supposed to take a person or a condition into my meditation, so I'd better fix that right now. That person I'm seeing, that's an image. It's a belief in God and that person. But did God make a person that can be born or can die? No. I know from my meditations that God is an invisible, incorporeal presence. Then what is this? This must be that universal belief that Joel told me about, that the Infinite Way talks about. This must be the universal belief in sometimes healthy, sometimes sick. This must be the universal belief in two. Two, two, two. This must be that duality. Belief in duality. What am I supposed to do about it? Well, I'm not supposed to take a person into my meditation or a condition, so that's not the way. So I'm going to drop that. What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to see that it's an impersonal, belongs to no one. It was here way before a person was, and it'll be here way after the person is gone. So it doesn't belong to the person. It's impersonal. But I'm also supposed to see that it has no power. It sure seems to be operating with power. Well, because that's not the entire complete principle. It has no power where God is realized. If I'm standing in the dark, I could have a master's thesis on electricity, and I could be discussing it and thinking thoughts about electricity and how nice it would be if I had some, and still standing in the dark. But when I flip that switch over there and the lights come on, the darkness disappears. I don't know what happens to the darkness. I don't know where it goes. I think it was a nothingness to begin with, and so when the light shines, I see. There is no darkness. I'm standing in a room. It's the same with this. I've got to come into the conscious awareness that right where this appearance is looking like a power, if I can drop it, well, they tell me that this is not a power. The Infinite Way says this is not a power. Where the light is turned on, it dissolves because it's nothingness. So let me see if I can now drop that. And let's do what I'm told in the Infinite Way. Take the word God. What do I know about God? Well, I don't want to know anything with my mind, but let's know a couple of things so I can relax and maybe have the awareness. And so I take God. I and the Father are one. I and God are one. So God is I and I is God. And I is infinite and I is incorporeal, and I is invisible, and I is the light. So what can I tell this I? What do I need to tell this I? Nothing. In fact, what am I even doing here? Let's drop this me, and let's become still. Now, Father, reveal thyself. Let the I operate. And I reach a place where I relax. I rest. I rest. I have seen this appearance as nothingness in the presence of I. Now let I reveal itself. And I feel the spiritual omnipresence. I feel the I and its movement. And I know that I is here as an experience, as an awareness. I have an awareness of I. And if it's deep enough and sufficiently, I'm sufficiently aware of it, then I open my eyes and I, next thing I know is Frank's calling me and he says he's feeling better. It's not gone yet, but he's feeling better. Stronger, and I go back into my meditation again, and again, and again. Now, in the beginning, of course, it's going to be the easier things. Let's say that there's an appearance of lack. I'm not sure how I'm going to... How am I going to get the money to pay the rent this month? So I sit down and I have this meditation just like we did. I grapple with these things until I'm able to drop them and stop. And I have an inner awareness and I discover that awareness melts, dissolves this appearance. How do I discover it? Because in the days that follow these meditations, suddenly an unexpected gift comes right out of the universe and the rent is paid right on time. Something I didn't plan or think of. And I'm able to see, hey, wait a minute, Joel was right. This belief in lack, this universal belief, is not a power in the presence of I. In the presence of I realized, in the presence of realization of I, the appearance dissolves. Wow. And so I practice it again and again. And in this way, we develop the consciousness to the point where, well, Joel says eventually I takes over and lives our life for us. Because at that point, we've overcome the world. Now, he says, all evil, regardless of its name or nature, is the product of universal hypnotism. Whatever discord touches us is nothing but this mesmeric sense. It is a universal belief. We come under this hypnotism from the moment of conception. We are subject either to the universal carnal mind and its beliefs, or we are responding more and more to the spiritual urge. Now, when we come under the universal carnal mind, we're living by the law. The law was given by Moses, but grace and truth through Christ Jesus. I do not want to live under the law. I want to live by grace. But I can't live by grace if I just study half of the message. Just tell me about God. I want to know about error. Error is not real. So I'm living in denial, aren't I? Like a codependent that says, you ask them how they're doing, and they say, I'm fine. And they're denying that they're living in a household of alcoholism, run rampant. And they're pretending everything's okay. I'm fine. No. That's a type of lying to ourselves, and we don't want that. We want to be honest. If I'm suffering and I'm still suffering from something, I need to be honest and find out what is the principle I missed. It's usually the second half, which is the nature of error and what to do about it. So, he says, in autumn, with the first cold rains, probably 3 or 4 people out of 10 will be sniffling with a cold. Not because they're wrong thinking, no, it's not personal to them, but because of the universal hypnotism. This hypnotism we must break by realizing that hypnotism or carnal mind is not of God and is not spiritually ordained. It has no spiritual law. Therefore, it is not power. Now, there's nothing wrong with sitting down in your meditation and rehearsing this mentally. As long as you know you haven't gone far enough. Just like knowing that God is the only presence. If you know that hypnotism or carnal mind is not of God, is not spiritually ordained, has no spiritual law, therefore is not power, that's not enough. It's not power because right now I'm going to be still. And it's not power in God realized, in Christ realized. So now let me be still and let that realization take place. He gives us that example really well here in The Art of Spiritual Healing, how he does it. There's nothing wrong with mentally rehearsing the principle as long as you know you haven't gone far enough. So, he says, let me find it here. Yes, he says, consciously remember as you go into your meditation, you are not praying for the purpose of changing, healing, reforming, or correcting anything or anyone. Establish this clearly in your mind. I am going into meditation, but there is no person and no condition involved. My meditation has nothing to do with the person, and it has nothing to do with the condition. My meditation has to do with realizing a spiritual presence right where I am. So now I am going to be silent and let that realization take place. See that? The principle, he says, behind this is that inasmuch as the activity of the human mind is the substance and fabric of hypnotism, when the human mind is not functioning, there's no more hypnotism. When you are not thinking thoughts or words, when you are in a stillness, the human mind is stopped. The hypnotism is gone. When you experience this, you will feel something which transcends the human dimension of life. Yes, he says, you watch the stone being formed in and of your consciousness while you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder. And you will catch a glimpse of God as is. And you will see the appearance dissolve. Now in the beginning, you believe that there are some things that are easy and some things that are harder. I think for some people, I think for Joel, it was easier to heal disease and harder for a while to demonstrate abundance. He had a hard time, he said, with his finances. For me, it was easier to demonstrate supply and harder to demonstrate healing of disease. We all have our areas that we need to work on. And I'm happy to say that as you continue to practice both parts, the nothingness of impersonal error and the allness of omnipresent I, and then resting in that until that awareness dissolves the appearance, more and more you will see it becomes easier. And so you're led to what is, quote, the more difficult things, unquote. So, we do not fight hypnotism. We do not argue with it. We do not attempt to destroy it. We do not attempt to rise above it. Hypnotism and the carnal mind are merely names, just names which identify good and evil as the essence of all hypnotism. And the more we live, he says, in the realization that we do not have to be subject to universal hypnotism, the more we free ourselves and live under grace instead of under the law. The only presence is omnipresence. Even though we may see sin, disease, and death, the only presence is omnipresence. God is the only power regardless of appearances, and God is omniscience. Therefore, we do not have to know anything about the activity of mind or body. All we have to do is to rest in God's omniscience, rest in His infinite wisdom, rest in the awareness. All right, now this is hard to get, but it's a principle that we must have, because we can't overcome the world with only half of the principle. Yes, we can have spiritual experiences, but we'll still experience lack, limitation, death, disease, poverty. We want to have the completed picture. We want to know that all evil is impersonal. There's no person involved. He says, to the degree we realize that in all this world there exists no such thing as good or evil, are we without a carnal mind? Yes, but it's not enough to know that mentally. It's the next step that you take, where you stand so still that you come into the conscious awareness, knowing that the appearance has no power in that awareness. You rest. You're able to rest. You're not fighting anymore. You haven't brought a person or a condition into your meditation. You've just known that that's impersonal, and it's nothing. In the presence of omnipresence, it's nothing. And then you rest. You come into that awareness. And when you open your eyes in some miraculous way, it seems miraculous, the appearance is dissolved, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but it will always dissolve if you have the awareness. He says, therefore, even to think or say that something, person, or condition is good is to permit the carnal mind to control us. There is only one being, one essence, one power, and that is consciousness, God. Consciousness is neither good nor evil. It just is. All right, so you see now that you have to have the conscious awareness of the I, and then the conscious bearing witness, beholding, as that I dissolves everything unlike itself. Then you can say, aha, it's really true. The person and the condition is nothingness, belonging to no one, because there's only one presence here. But then it's a consciousness of it, not a thought of it. He says, for consciousness to be good, it would have to have an opposite. There are no opposites in God. He says, the carnal mind is not overcome by fighting, but by recognizing it's made up of belief. Now, that is something that has to happen in your meditation. You have to come to the place where you're not bringing a person or a condition into your meditation. You have to come to the place where you've had enough glimpses and seen these things dissolve so that you're no longer working on them. Now when you see them, you're able to close your eyes, become very still, and bear witness to God. And then open your eyes and see the appearance dissolve. And eventually, says Joel, you're able to do this with just a smile. You don't even have to go through all the formal steps of knowing the truth or affirmations or denials or mentally rehearsing. You don't have to go through the steps of sitting down, closing your eyes, and waiting to feel that presence. No, you're in such a consciousness of omnipresence that you're able to look at these things appearing and simply smile. And I believe that's the consciousness that has overcome the world. And to him that overcomes will I give a new name, and that name is Christ. Now, he says, this does not mean that in our everyday human experience we do not take cognizance of good and evil. While it is true that humanly we seem compelled to acknowledge the limitations of good and evil, we must recognize that consciousness does not embody good or evil. As we engage in the routine activities of the day, we inwardly maintain our spiritual awareness of the I as individual consciousness, and acknowledge that whatever appears in our experience as sin, disease, death, or limitation is the carnal mind, which is no mind. Yes, it's a name which was supposed to denote nothingness. And so he's saying, humanly, your mind will always see duality. The human mind will always see duality. We just heard that when you're thinking thoughts of good or evil, that is the hypnotism itself. And when thoughts come to a standstill, because you recognize that this is impersonal, and this is nothingness, and then you stand still and come into the awareness of the I, of omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence, and rest on that sea of spirit, and then you see the spirit flow. And when you open your eyes, you see the picture before you change. Well, you come to see that it's a nothingness, but you come into the awareness of it as a nothingness, not the belief or the thought. Throughout our human experience, we cannot avoid being aware of sin, disease, and poverty in the world. As long as there is a world made up of the belief in good and evil, these pictures will be here for us to see. Sickness, death, insanity, and all those things that go to make up carnal mind. What determines the harmony of our experience is our reaction to these. Not hiding our heads in the sand and declaring they do not exist, but recognizing they do have temporal power. They are power to a world that believes in good and evil, but they are not power to me, because I know there is but one presence, one power. And then we rest, we let that power reveal itself, that presence reveal itself. You see that? This is very, again, it takes a certain balance to be able to walk in a world appearing as good and evil, and rest in the invisible, knowing, inner knowing, that I am the only presence. And then watch and behold as that presence dissolves this world, good and evil. At the beginning of our spiritual journey, we are merely coming out of the mortal sense of evil into a better sense of human life. Healthier, wealthier, happier. But that's not the goal of life. The ultimate of life is spiritual realization, which eventually takes us out of both evil and good of human existence. Yes, in the beginning we come to the infinite way with a set of problems, and we practice these principles so that things may get better, and they do. But if we stick around long enough and continue to practice, we come to see, as in the New Horizon, which he says very few people study, we have to overcome the good that we just created. And so both have to be overcome because they're both this world. And it turns out this world is impersonal nothingness. So we both of those have to be overcome. So we go back to the drawing board, what did I miss? And we usually find out this, the nature of error. We were thinking that bad, we wanted to get rid of the bad, and it turns out that the opposites, bad and good, are both parts of this universal belief. So we practice again. He says, as you witness the evils of the world and they turn up in your experience or your families or neighbors or nations, be sure in your meditation that you cover the two major principles of the infinite way. First, open the door of your consciousness and admit I. That's the first part. Your recognition of this truth is the birth of the Christ in you, coming into the conscious awareness of I. But when you accept this, do not forget, it's not complete until you have followed up the omnipotence of I, which is the first principle of the infinite way, with the second principle, which is the non-power of that which is appearing as the world, whether good or bad. See that? There's two parts. In your experience, you will be dealing with persons of different states of consciousness. It is not enough, I can assure you, to bear witness to the fact that Christ is in them. That's only half. You must take the second step as well and recognize that the carnal mind is not power. Only this completes your prayer or your meditation. Until you have acknowledged I in the midst of me as God and I in the midst of you as God and the carnal mind, universal belief in two powers as non-power, then and then alone have you completed the demonstration. It takes both parts. So he says, do not try to destroy evil in a person. Realize the universal nature of the carnal mind and then nothingize it. This can be done because God never created a carnal mind. God never created two. Therefore, as you impersonalize and nothingize, you bring your prayer, treatment, or realization to a conclusion. Then you can rest and be certain that you have really handled the situation spiritually. Okay, so you need both parts. You need both parts, and even though you don't like to look at it and you don't like to recognize error as impersonal nothingness, you don't like to impersonalize and nothingize, it's just so much nicer to just sit down. It's not enough to just sit down and say God is omnipresent and I rest in that. You must practice both parts of the principle if you want to be free from this world, if you want to overcome this world. Because if you practice both parts, you will come into the consciousness which dissolves error with a smile. In other words, you'll come into Christ consciousness. Do not destroy evil in a person. Realize the universal nature of carnal mind and then nothingize it. Okay? The evil that comes nigh your dwelling place always personalizes itself. It comes as a sin or a temptation, a false appetite in you or in another person. It always personalizes itself. Watch, and you'll see. Think about, you never think about drug addiction, you think about the drug addict. You never think about universal carnal mind, you think about the man. Because evil always comes in a personalized form. But there is no evil person confronting you. There's no evil condition. This is a personalization of the impersonal carnal mind. It's not your belief. It's a universal belief. And as you recognize this and impersonalize it, the evil falls away from the person. It falls away from him, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And then he finishes up with, "No God power is used. When you learn to impersonalize evil, you do not have to call upon God. You can accept God as omnipotence, but only if you can see so-called evil appearance as Maya or illusion, and not try to get God to do something. Then you can say to the blind man, 'Open your eyes.' The moment you try to get a God power, you have lost the demonstration. If you can look at the impotent man and say, 'Rise, take up thy bed and walk,' you can help him. But when you turn to God to do something for him, you're in the same dream that he is. The spiritually illumined know that there is no need to call on God, because God is always about his business. Yes, if you really want to honor God, know that God is always being God, and so no God power is used. But the recognition of omnipotence and omniscience and the unreal nature of appearances brings it into manifestation. See, it's on you to have the realization. It's the realization that manifests. You're not calling on God, sitting still until God does something for you, or for him or her. No. No. You're sitting still until you can step out of this universal hypnotism that has been personalizing, showing itself as this person, until you can step out of that, come into the conscious awareness, oh, that's right, I, it is I, be not afraid. Oh, yes, I. And then your conscious recognition of that dissolves the appearance of a person in your meditation, so that all you have is that conscious awareness of I. And then you open your eyes and it manifests. Once we know the truth that every form of discord in our life is a form of hypnotism, to the extent that we can accept God being, we release ourselves. And then our mind is not reaching out to God, not seeking good. We are completely released from seeking anything. God is, I am, and we rest in that. Isn't that wonderful? And so finally he says, impersonalize God, impersonalize evil. Know the nature of I as universal being. Do not allow the veil that personalizes God to be put back on. Make no image of God. Do not make even a mental image, and then you will not be personalizing God. Once this truth has been unveiled for you, it will never be veiled again. You will never be able to go back to making concepts of God and looking to God to do something to the nothingness. Instead, always that smile will come to your lips and the word I will come, and you will be at peace. You will be at rest, and then in quietness and confidence, you can be a beholder of God in action. You do not empower it or impel it. You do not send it forth. No, in quietness and confidence, you become a beholder, watching it at work. And so, I see that we're right on time here to wrap this up. If you haven't studied the nature of error and haven't gone into it, I suggest that you do. If you don't have that, the Kailua Study Series transcripts, I suggest you get it. Or get the tape, the series of tapes from the Infinite Way office in, I think it's in California now. One way or another, study the nature of error. What I did was I ordered every tape there was on the nature of error because I recognized I missed it. I missed something. I wanted to study all about God, but I didn't like this thinking about error. It seemed to me I could brush that under the carpet. But you can't. You have to know both of these parts or the demonstration will be incomplete. I want the life that Christ demonstrates, and that's harmony within and without. That is overcoming this world. I have overcome the world. So I had to go back to the drawing board, and I contacted the offices of the Infinite Way, and I got their list of cassette tapes at the time, and I ordered every tape in that book that had error in the title. And I listened, and I listened, and I studied, and I studied, and I still didn't get it. It wasn't until I began to see in meditation that awareness dissolves this world. Awareness dissolves belief. When I began to see awareness dissolves belief, and I began to have the awareness more and more, and I began to see more and more of beliefs dissolved, and the picture out here changed for myself and my family and other people that contacted me, then I began to see, now it's complete. Now I know that the ultimate is to see that this world, good and evil, is impersonal and nothing. Nothing. Because right here, well, be not afraid, it is I. I am the only presence, the only power. And the inner realization of that presence dissolves the beliefs that are appearing, and it manifests as harmony, as healing, as abundance. And then we're able to say, now I know it really is nothing, because I've seen it dissolved. Not because I read it or I'm rehearsing it in my mind, because I've been able to bear witness to that presence, that power dissolving the nothingness, or the nothingness dissolving in the presence of the power of God, or the allness of God, or the omnipresence of I. You see? It's an inner experience, an inner awareness, and it takes place again and again, so that eventually, now I'm not there, sometimes, but not all the time, I'm not able yet to just smile at everything, but sometimes I have had the experience where I've been caught off guard, and I haven't thought to myself, now what are the principles, what do I have to practice? I haven't thought of that, because I've just been in this awareness and something's hit up against it and I've smiled and it's dissolved. I've seen that, but it's not all the time. And so I'm still walking, just like you are. Now, I hope that makes it clear. I hope you get that secret of the healing principle and you study it and study it and study it. I love the way he goes into the fact that you imagine a bandstand, and you imagine a band playing in Hawaii there, and you imagine this and that, and then you come to see that you don't have to dissolve each and every one of those instruments, and then the people, and then the stand. You can do it all in one fell swoop by recognizing the fabric of that entire thing is imagination. And then he says, you don't have to dissolve each and every error as it appears to you. You have to come to see it's all the fabric of universal belief or mental concepts or whatever term you use that means nothingness. Then you're able to dissolve it in one fell swoop. Or as he says in the Kailua study series there, it gave me the secret to the whole thing. How do you dissolve this in this world? By seeing it's impersonal and nothing. Nothingness. And then standing stock still and having that awareness of omnipresence and seeing it dissolve that nothingness. Just like turning the light on in the darkness and seeing the darkness disappear. This experience is the same. It may be gradual, as if you are sitting up just before dawn. Maybe you've been camping outside and you've awakened just before dawn, and slowly, slowly everything lightens around you until you can see the rocks and the stream and the forest and the woods and the sky. Or maybe it comes to you just like turning that light on in the middle of the night in a dark room and boom. It can happen both ways. But you come to see in the awareness of I, error is nothingness. And when it comes again and again, you build the consciousness that can look at error and smile and see it dissolve. Okay, I hope that clears it up a little, and I hope you go back and study it if you missed it until you get it. And then more than study it, practice, practice, practice. Okay, that's how you develop the spiritual healing consciousness. And thank you.